Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And, you know, New York played an outsized role at both conventions. Both candidates live here. The New York delegation was even placed front and center at the Republican convention, which is unusual. Trump is campaigning today in Plattsburgh, up in the Adirondacks near the Canadian border, which is really unusual. Very few people live there, for one thing. And it's in a state considered unwinnable, except that he claims he can win it. So we'll talk about that now and the behind-the-scenes internal politics of being in the New York convention delegations, like Cuomo and de Blasio talking about unity but displaying none, with Ben Max, executive editor of the Gotham Gazette. Hi, Ben. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Good to be here.
So let's start with Cuomo, de Blasio. That's a headline of an article you wrote. They call for unity but show none. How did they do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, in headlines you can't show much nuance. They did show some unity, but not with each other. And that's sort of what I was getting at there. Basically, you know, both Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio went to the Democratic National Convention talking about unifying the party, as many Democrats did, behind Hillary Clinton for president. And Bernie Sanders obviously had a huge role in that. But of course, they brought their feud there as well. And this is, you know, the big internal politics story of New York politics and New York Democrats, is this ongoing feud between the governor and the mayor. Lots of folks you talk to who were at the convention, who were in the New York delegation, people just don't want to talk about this anymore. They want it to go away. They want them both to get over it. So, you know, that's a little bit of the gist behind that.
And so, for example, I hear Cuomo talked longer than scheduled at a New York delegation event. I think it was a breakfast at which de Blasio was also expected to speak but then didn't have time.
Right. So basically, the New York delegation had breakfast each of the few days where breakfast, you know, was possible because of the schedule, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of last week. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, only went to one and he didn't speak at any. And that really gets at, you know, what we see between the two, because the state Democratic Party is controlled by Governor Cuomo. The one de Blasio went to on Thursday, he was scheduled to speak, but you get conflicting stories from the different camps, as you often do. The Cuomo folks say there was no snub. The de Blasio folks say, you know, they sort of clearly, you know, went over time and didn't give the mayor a chance to speak. And, you know, it's really hard to tell in this instance what was what.
And you write that they were each boasting of their progressive accomplishments. Was there some one-upsmanship on that in the hallways or something?
Well, not exactly. I mean, I think, you know, what's fascinating, and I wrote this in the article as well, is that, you know, Andrew Cuomo can talk about a lot of great progressive accomplishments in New York State, and he's led several of them recently, whether it's marriage equality or a rise in the minimum wage or paid family leave. It's so fascinating when you hear him do this that he doesn't mention the fact that the state is funding pre-kindergarten all across the state, especially in New York City, because that's de Blasio's main accomplishment.
And you're right that they were each well, why can't they get along? Let me just ask you that flat out. You know, we're so used to this feud between de Blasio and Cuomo, who agree on more issues than they disagree on. Why is it, again, that they can't get along?
Right. I mean, this is a long and convoluted story at this point. I mean, one of the big factors is that they both want to be the big dog, so to speak, right? So you get these sort of big egos and big agendas, and that can often be problematic. There's a long history of mayors of New York City and governors of New York not getting along, so there's nothing new there. But this has gone to a whole different level, and it's become quite personal. Maybe their chances of getting along was actually hurt by the fact that they go back so long working with each other, de Blasio working under Cuomo at HUD. But then when de Blasio bursts onto the scene with quite a bit of wind at his back becoming mayor, you know, he pushed Cuomo a bit hard on a state tax to pay for pre-K, and a variety of other things went from there between the two.
Since we're talking about the New York delegations at the Democratic, and we'll get into the Republican conventions, anybody who attended either convention as a delegate happen to be listening right now, we would love to hear from you. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, wherever you are, if you attended as a delegate, tell us a story or tell us your favorite moment. If you're a New York delegate, were you a Cuomo or de Blasio loyalist you tend to be, and how did you perceive the two of them trying to be the alpha dog against each other, or however you want to put it, or anyone else who is actually a delegate and is now back from Philadelphia or Cleveland? Call up and tell us a story. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 with Ben Mack, executive editor of the Gotham Gazette.
I'll say one more thing on the mayor and the governor at the DNC that people I spoke with, you know, talked about a bit, was that Mayor de Blasio seems to have come back down to earth quite a bit. He's had a lot of political setbacks. And people said, you know, he took an approach at the DNC that was a bit more congenial. He was hanging out in the lobby of the hotel. He was talking with lots of people. He did an event almost every day with other mayors and, you know, things of that nature, that he was really just trying to be a part of the party apparatus there. And even in his remarks, he focused them solely on the difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, which was very interesting to some people. And all of those contrast with the way that the governor approached the convention.
Probably a smart, slight retraction of his profile. But one of the reporters who was there told me off the air the other day, you know, internally, de Blasio was kind of a star, that there were a lot of delegates from states around the country that were like, ooh, Bill de Blasio, wow, you know, and they wanted to come up and have their picture taken or talk to him. So, you know, sometimes what we see from this narrow eye view of de Blasio versus Cuomo, you know, doesn't necessarily, or even Clinton being angry at de Blasio, which is, I guess, worth mentioning, the fact that he came on board late after withholding his endorsement for a while in the fall, had ramifications all the way through the convention, right?
Absolutely, yeah, I know. You know, and people close to the mayor say, you know, he was never going to have some big time speaking slot because it's not any, you know, Michael Bloomberg comes out behind Hillary Clinton, and that's big news. And I think the mayor even said that on your program Friday.
That's fair. And they're putting up, you know, parents of people killed by the police, parents of people killed in war. Right. You know, those are the kinds of displays that a Democratic convention needs to make, not the progressive mayor of New York City.
And you also have big time Democratic
stars. Mayor of L.A.,
stars.
Eric Garcetti, he didn't get a prime right. speaking slot. Mayor of San Francisco, I mean, who did? Who's right. in his position?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Bill de Blasio has played his cards not very well in terms of his national profile, and there's lots to dissect there. But also, you know, I wouldn't disagree with a lot of what's being said by his camp and what you just said, that, you know, the liberal mayor of New York City coming out behind the Democratic nominee or speaking on her behalf is not necessarily that eye-catching.
Were there other internal dynamics in the New York Democratic delegation worth mentioning? You wrote something about state Senate leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins?
Yeah, well, Andrea Stewart-Cousins is currently the minority leader of the state Senate, and so there's lots of buzz during the convention, you know, talk about whether the Democrats can take the state Senate and therefore all of New York government with the, you know, obviously having control of the governor's seat. The you know, talk about Andrea Stewart-Cousins taking over as leader of the you know, as leader of the Democrats in the state Senate, you know, there was a lot of talk about that, and there's a lot of doubts about whether Andrew Cuomo will actually back that Democratic campaign.
Let's take a call from Angela, I'm sorry, in Brooklyn, who went to the DNC. Hi, Angela, to attend protests.
Oh, or, hi. How are you?
Good.
Were you actually
were you a Sanders delegate, or did you go to be a protester outside?
No, I will forever always wish I had been a delegate. I actually stayed with a delegate from another state and her hotel to help, you know, defray some of the costs. And anyway, and I actually was also in the same room with two protest organizers and someone who helps campaigners. It was actually a wonderful experience. But, you know, one of the things that concerns me is that when I went there, I went. So they allowed us to go to the arena Monday night, but I guess because of all the booing, the volunteers for the Bernie Sanders campaign did not get credentials to go in any of the other nights. I had to leave on Wednesday, so I couldn't stay the whole week. But one of the things that concerns me is that there were so many, there were like thousands of people like in parks all over the city, you know, with all, you know, and all good people too, like all the type of people that would like, you know, have hid you if you were a Jew in Nazi Germany and like, worked on the Underground Railroad or, you know, I mean, just really good people. And they were out there everyone who was out there was like, oh, I had, you know, someone at home who couldn't come. So it would have been helpful. There were just so many people who are just not fully on board with Hillary. And what concerns me is that, you know, they're all flocking to Jill Stein, and I'm older, and I remember what happened. I was heartbroken when Al Gore did not win against Bush. I won't be as heartbroken because I'm not as fan, as much of a fan as Hillary, but, you know, I just see that this divide not really going away. You know, it's kind of a scary thing for me because
so,
I feel
so
that.
So were you an anti-Clinton protester in Philadelphia, but you'll vote for Clinton because
no,
you don't want Trump to get in?
Because I don't want Trump to get in, but I'm going, you know, I have a son in the military. So basically whatever I decide will really, you know, I mean, I'm just one vote and I live in a Democratic state. So I think that as Americans, we're not so two-dimensional. We're not Republican, Democrat really anymore. And many other countries in Europe do have more than two parties. I think that my vote would best be spent by voting for Jill Stein. But because I live in New York, I have the luxury of saying it's not likely to go to Trump anyway.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I mean, who knows what's going to happen by November. But I, you know, I want to do that because I feel that, you know, there we need to have another party in there. I think that this whole thing, you know, like you have, you know, we're multidimensional. We're not just two-dimensional anymore. I think we've evolved past that. And, you know, like, you know, other countries, we have differing views than just, you know, Republican, Democrat,
yes,
or black and white. It's, and, you know, there's many shades in between, I think.
And it'll be interesting to see if out of this serious divide in both parties during the primary season, some kind of third or even fourth party emerges that makes us more like the UK or someplace. There are so many structural advantages to the Democratic and Republican parties in this, what we consider a two-party system, that it's hard for them to emerge. But who knows after this year what might be possible. Angela, thank you so much for checking in. As we have a few more minutes with Ben Max, editor-in-chief of the Gossam Gazette. And Ben, to her point about Trump and New York, you have an article about Trump saying he thinks he can win New York. I know he'll say anything, whether he believes it or not. But he is campaigning in Plattsburgh today, which one would not expect him to spend any time on unless, by the usual rules, he thought he could win the state.
Right. I think that and our colleagues at the New York Times had a really good article about where the campaigns are going to focus on the swing states that are really at play. And the Trump campaign is realizing that they might not have a chance to the presidency without those states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida. But Donald Trump absolutely thinks that he can take New York because he and his supporters think that he's a different kind of candidate and that he can break down all sorts of lines. I think he's also coming back to New York, and he'll do that regularly because this is his base, this is his home, and he wants to shore up support. And of course, both candidates will be here to fundraise as well.
Was there any similar intrigue at the Republican convention, maybe with respect to the New York delegation, that is, since that's what you're writing about? I guess the first question to ask about any delegation at the Republican convention is who bothered to show up and who decided to carefully stay away.
Right. There's some interesting storylines there as well in terms of division within the party. I think you probably say at this point the Republican Party is a bit more divided on their candidate than the Democrats are, even though you have a lot of those Bernie Sanders supporters wondering where they're going to go. You know, there's some New York City elected officials especially and some New York State elected officials who've been very hesitant to jump on the Trump train. One of those is Queens Council member Eric Ulrich, for example. You also have certain members of Congress like Chris Gibson, who's retiring and was almost going to challenge Governor Cuomo in 2018, you know, who've been very hesitant. He's an Army veteran and or a military veteran, and, you know, he's expressed his reservations as well. So there's lots of hesitancy from some New York officials about jumping on, but you have a lot of New York enthusiasm about Donald Trump as well.
So who was there? Do you know any kind of names or clusters of people and what kind of sector they come from? Because one of the key moments of that convention was when the New York delegation started leading Trump supporters in booing Ted Cruz when it became apparent that Cruz's speech was not going to end in an endorsement of Trump. And Cruz even noted it from the stage. He said, I see the enthusiasm of the New York delegation.
Right.
So who was in the forefront of that, do we know?
Well, City Councilmember Joe Borelli from Staten Island said that he was engaged in helping lead those chants. And so I think he's been a big Trump supporter for quite a while now. So I think he was among those. you know, the New York delegation had a lot of regard and was led by Rudy Giuliani. Now, I don't know if the former mayor was leading those chants. I don't think he was, but that he was a major figure for the New York delegation at the RNC, and that was quite interesting to see.
There is a little bit of Republican New York dissent news today. I gather the Republican chairman or secretary of Orange County, whose name is James Booth, says he's decided he cannot support Trump. Orange County is like Woodbury and Newburgh out to Port Jervis. Did you see that?
I saw that come across my Twitter feed, I think, but I haven't looked at it more closely. I mean, you're seeing, you know, there's a statement put out by John McCain today. There's even statements from Donald Trump's
denouncing Trump over the Kaiser Kahn and Mrs. Kahn snub.
Yes, exactly, about all the back and forth that's going on there. That's, again, quite unfortunate for the political discourse in this country that we're focused on these types of back and forth and not about, you know, substantive ideas about how to take the country forward. But you're seeing, I think, quite a few Republican elected officials or even Republican voters who, you know, have to think about some of the comments that are coming from the Trump campaign. You even see Donald Trump's vice presidential running mates put out statements that sort of contradict or walk back some of the presidential candidates' comments.
Pence just saying, I think in a very bland way from what I could see, that we honor all Gold Star families, that is families of American service people killed in action like the Kahns. It's pretty bland for a walk back.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that they're going to, as many have, you walk these delicate lines. You have the House Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, respectively, putting out all these statements, you know, sort of half condemning Trump's comments, but they are, you know, still supporting him.
So last thing, we talked about the Democratic delegation at the New York delegation at the Democratic convention, obviously Democrats, the New York delegation at the Republican convention, obviously Republicans. There was that one other guy who showed up at the Democratic convention who's an independent. His name is Bloom something?
Sure.
He was the mayor for three terms, I think. He was only supposed to be the mayor for two, but somehow he got in there a third
term.
Story
for another time.
Did he hobnob with the New York delegation at all? Or being an independent, what did he just kind of parachute in, give his anti-Trump speech, and take a private helicopter out?
I don't know exactly what his modes of transportation were, but he was not, you know, among the firmament there, and he was not going to, for example, the panel on income inequality that Mayor de Blasio was moderating.
I guess. All right. Ben Max, executive editor of Gotham Gazette, writing about Trump's attempts to win in New York, even if they're symbolic, and writing about the New York delegations at the conventions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.